You're listening to the Save the Marriage Podcast. Your marriage can be saved and strengthened if you have the right information. Join Dr. Lee Baucom as he explores ways for you to improve your relationship and your life, starting right now.
Hey, this is Lee Baucom. Welcome to the Save the Marriage Podcast. This is the podcast designed to help you save your marriage no matter where you are in the process. If you're at the beginning of the relationship, you may be working to save your marriage before it ever gets into trouble. This is great information to have before anything happens. If you're at the other end, if you have been through your relationship and you're finding that you're skidding towards the cliff, this is also a great place to learn how to pull your relationship back from the edge. Either way, the same principles apply. No matter where you are in the process, there are some pieces that are exactly the same because of the nature of relationships. The way back to a good marriage is the same way you get to a great marriage from the beginning. Now, today's information is a little more aimed at those that are kind of at the edge of trying to figure out what's happening. Maybe you've been putting in some effort to save your marriage and you're not seeing the results. I get the calls, I get the emails almost every day from people saying, you know, I've been working on this for, and they name an amount of time. Sometimes it's a week, sometimes it's a month, sometimes it's 6 months, sometimes it's 6 years. But they always give me a time and they say, I'm just not seeing the turnaround. I'm not seeing when this is going to start on a better path. And their question is, why is that? Well, today I want to talk about why that could be. And my observation is that the lack of a turnaround, the lack of a sudden shift happens for one of three reasons. Let me give you an example. A few weeks ago, I had a person who called me, and they had been married for 18 years. Now, this person was wanting to pull back the relationship, but she admitted that there had been lots of damage done during the relationship. They had neglected each other. They had chosen other things, other aspects of life over each other. They chose the kids rather than focusing on themselves. They chose careers rather than focusing on themselves. They chose hobbies and friends rather than focusing on themselves. And along the way, the hurts and the pains began to accumulate. And while neither one really noticed it, they became more and more disconnected, and not only disconnected, but terribly bruised by what was going on. Well, at some point, the husband finally said, you know what? I've had enough. I just can't keep doing this. I've got to find some place where I don't feel so hollow, so empty, and so hurt all the time, so rejected. Now, the wife was also feeling hurt and rejected and empty, but her tact was to want to work on the relationship. And so she was working on the relationship and finding that even though she was really changing and doing some good work and really putting in a lot of effort and reconnection, he still was maintaining his distance. And the question she had for me is, why is that? So reason number one is because of the depth of the damage, the depth of the damage. There's been so much hurt. There's been so much disconnection that it takes some time to get back. A lot of times I hear from people who are very angry and they have to get through the anger in order to get to a better place. But sometimes I hear about cases where there's almost a numbness that is just flat, kind of an indifference towards the other person. I will be honest with you and tell you that it usually is more easy to turn a relationship where there is still anger than when there is numbness, when there is just complete disconnection, you know, the feeling of, I don't even care what's going on with you. I don't care what you're trying to do. I just don't care. That indifference is much more a symptom of how far along the process of disconnection has gone than if there is anger. You see, a lot of times people think that anger really is the opposite of love, and it's not. Anger is another reflection of love. We get angry because we're hurt, and we're hurt because we're still connected. If somebody in the world around you does something and you have no connection with them, it doesn't matter what they do. It's not going to hurt you. It's not going to bother you. It's not going to have an impact on you. But if somebody you love deeply does something, you may take it personally. It may hurt your feelings. It may feel much more of an emotional response. And when we feel hurt, we respond with anger. And so anger is letting me know there's still connection because there's still hurt, and we can only be hurt when there is connection. A little further out from that level of connection is such a level of disconnection that it leads to kind of a numbness or a flatness, just a lack of kind of, let's call it an indifference towards each other. And the indifference tells me that the process of disconnection has gone even further. And let me just say real clearly that that doesn't mean that the relationship can't be retrieved. It just means that there's a lot more damage done than when there is anger. And so when there's a lot of hurt and a lot of disconnect, the more the hurt, the more the disconnect, the longer it takes to get back to a better place, the longer it takes to dig to restore the relationship. Okay, the second reason why there isn't any turnaround is because there's been no true change in the pattern. Now, let me be clear here that I'm guessing that if you're listening to this, you're probably working on this relationship pretty much by yourself. You may have some tacit or even active participation by your spouse, but not a lot, that you're actually here working to try to figure out why you can't get this to turn around on your own. And the reason I say that is because if both people want the relationship to turn around, there's not much that's going to get in the way of it turning around. They might have to kind of move through a lot of mess, but a lot of times it's easy to restore because both people have bought into the fact that they want to restore the relationship. So if you're here and you're hearing me say this, I want you to hear me also say, I'm not saying it's your fault that the relationship is where it is, but I am saying it's you're choosing a responsibility. You're choosing to take responsibility for changing that. And so sometimes I hear people say, you know, I want to save this. I want to work on the relationship, but nothing's changed. And so I simply ask, has anything truly changed about how you are in the relationship or how you are in the world? And I put it on this person, not because it's your fault, but because you're the one showing up to work on this. You're the one who wants to put forth the effort. And that's a great place to be. You know, I mean, I have a lot of empathy for that. I also have a lot of admiration for that, that it's courageous work to be working on a relationship when the other person has basically said, you know what, I'm checking out here, and you've decided to step up and do that. That's a great thing to do. At the same time, I recognize that sometimes people make that commitment and then nothing really changes. Nothing truly changes. And so sometimes there's no change in the interaction between a couple. You know, whatever the damaging dance that was going on before continues. The damaging pattern that happens between them continues on. And so there's no change in that. In other words, the other person, that spouse, can't feel that there's a change in how the two of you relate to each other. Sometimes there's no personal growth, meaning you haven't really taken on that second step that I talk about in my book. The second step is change yourself. The first step is connect with your spouse. The second one is change yourself. And that's not me saying, oh, there's something wrong with you. There's something broken about you that you've got to fix, as much as to recognize that we all have places of growth. That unless we show up as a different person, we're only showing up as the same person replicating the same patterns in our life. And so when there's been no personal growth, sometimes we don't see that turnaround. And sometimes it's because there's just no hope of a different outcome. Now, that relates to my third step, which is to create a new path. Sometimes a spouse might say, yeah, you've changed, and yeah, you're relating to me differently, but I just don't see how we can get to anywhere different. In those three ways, there has been no true change in the pattern. Sometimes people call me and say, hey, I've got your material and nothing's happening. And my first question is, have you gone through the material? And they'll say, well, you know, I've kind of read it. I've skimmed through it. And I'll say, have you really digested the material? And they'll say, well, you know, I've read most of it. And my next response is, have you begun to act on it? Have you begun to make the changes that I talk about in my Save the Marriage system? Because if you haven't made those changes, if you really haven't made a shift, then nothing's going to change in a relationship. You see, there's a lot of material out there that really gives you kind of trickery on how to fool a spouse into thinking that something's changed. They might use reverse psychology or, you know, some way of trying to act more distant to play hard to get, or to be more attractive, and to use different methods of doing that. that. And it's not that those methods are just completely trash. It's just that they don't do anything lasting unless you've actually made a change. Now, let me just say for a moment that some of them are trash. Some things that you're going to read, you've got to say, you know, let me run this through my BS meter. Does this really fit? Does this really put us at a different place? Or is this just a kind of a trick? Is this just kind of a little method to fool my spouse? If it's a method or a trick, set it aside. Go for true change. Go for true change in the relationship and how you're relating to your spouse. Go for true change in who you are and how you show up in the world. And go for true change on where your relationship is headed. Because until those three things change, then there has been no true change in the relationship. Those are my three simple steps. If you want to know the three simple steps, they are: connect with your spouse, change yourself, and create a new path for your relationship. That's what I outline in my How to Save Your Marriage in Three Simple Steps, and it's also kind of the platform I use for the Save the Marriage system. So if you haven't really applied that, if you really haven't stepped into a new place for yourself, a new place for the relationship, and a new direction for the relationship, then there's not been a true change in the pattern between you. A lot of times, couples will find that they constantly play the same dance steps. I call it the dance of marriage, right? We learn those steps, and what happens at the beginning is maybe we don't know the steps real well. It's kind of like picking up any new dance step. You don't know it real well, and so you stumble over each other, and you step on each other's feet, and then eventually you get to be pretty good at that dance. It's just possible that that dance is destructive. It's not a healthy dance. It's a destructive dance to the relationship and how you play that out. And so as you begin to look at the dance steps, the question is, have you changed your steps? Have you changed the steps of the relationship? Have you changed how that those steps carry you around the floor of life? Have you changed how you relate to each other in any true way? If not, then it's likely that what's keeping you stuck is there's been no true change in the pattern. Okay, there is a third reason that a lot of relationships don't turn around, and that's because there's someone else. And what's happened is that somebody has begun to connect with somebody else, to disconnect from the relationship and find connection somewhere else. This is what Gary Chapman and I discussed in our discussion, in our interview. Now, he talked about it as the tingles, and I really have kind of embraced using that because that's what's happening. Somebody gets the tingles for somebody else, and if there has been disconnection, the tingles feel really good. Let's face it, they feel good anyway. I mean, that's what we like about that falling in love phase, that infatuation stage of any relationship. Is it, you know, it gives you butterflies and you can't wait to see this other person, and you obsess about this other person, and it becomes an overwhelming gush of endorphins and adrenaline in your system that takes you to this high place of really, you know, being madly in love. And madly in love is the state of being. It's not sustainable though. The research shows that the tingles can't last for more than 2 years, biologically speaking, and usually don't last that long. A lot of times they fall apart fairly quickly, especially after you start to get into the patterns of a relationship. But when somebody else has developed a case of the tingles for somebody else, it can make it much harder to rebuild the relationship. And the reason is because suddenly they're getting something that they weren't feeling before. They weren't feeling it in their marriage, and they suddenly are feeling it for this other person. And they have made one big error. They've confused the feeling of the tingles with love. It's a very common mistake that we make in our culture where we think that the tingles is an indication of love rather than seeing that the tingles is the possibility. It creates a possibility at the beginning of any relationship for something deepening. But it really is a biological process where we are not really acting lovingly. We're feeling the love. We're feeling the emotions. We're feeling the tingles. We're feeling the adrenaline for the most part. And so if that's the case, if there is someone else, you have a couple of things you need to ponder. One, can you wait for that relationship to implode? Some people just say, you know what, that's an end game for me. I will not continue working on a relationship when there is somebody else. But some people say, you know what, I recognize that there's something going on in our relationship, which brings us to the next question. Can you see this affair as a symptom? whether it's an emotional or a physical affair, it happens for a combination of two reasons. One is a lack of connection in the relationship, and two is a lack of boundaries to protect the relationship, that somebody didn't feel enough connection in the relationship. They weren't getting that need met, and then they didn't have the boundaries in place to protect it. So can you see it as a symptom? Because if you can see it as a symptom, you may step back and say, okay, I can fix the underlying issues. We're going to have to figure out what we do down the road about boundaries, but it's possible that we can survive this by doing that connection work. And then the last thing is, can you make a request that the person in that relationship to respect the fact that there's still a commitment in place? If there is a marriage, it is fair to ask, if you're ready to step up to that and there's somebody else, it's fair to say, look, we have issues in our relationship that we need to solve before you step into the relationship. If for no other reason, then you can't go into another relationship in a healthy way when you are still involved in this. In other words, you're asking the person to kind of take on an honesty piece with both relationships, to say, I can't honestly be involved in this other relationship while I'm dishonestly a part of this. You see, affairs are dishonest on both ends. They're pretending that you can develop a relationship with someone else, at the same time pretending that nothing is going on in the relationship that's at risk. Neither are true. It's just the foundations of how we fool ourselves, that people who are involved in infidelity fool themselves into thinking, this is okay. I wasn't getting what I needed from my spouse, so I'm finding it somewhere else. That's okay. Instead of saying, wow, you know what? I need to clean up one relationship and see what happens with that before I go with another one. Okay, so now we've already talked about if there's someone else, you have to make a decision. Can you wait it out? Can you see if there is a way of that imploding? Can you see if there's a way of making a request that the other person, that your spouse honor the boundaries of the relationship and create a boundary with the other person? That's what you do if there's an affair. And by the way, there are some other resources on this blog. If you're on my blog, you can simply go up and do a search for affairs, and that will get you to some other resources that can help you figure out how to deal with that. Okay, but what about those other two? Because those are two that really are places that you have much more control over. The first one, the depth of damage. And the way through this is to decide that you're going to do the work, that you're going to take the time for healing and rebuilding trust, that the disconnection, the hurt, the pain, it's going to take more time than you think for it to heal. That's a frustrating reality, but it's the truth that when the damage is there, you have no control over how quickly that damage heals. Sometimes it happens very quickly. I've seen people kind of get to the place of forgiveness very quickly, and then I've seen where people have been, it takes a long time to get to that place because they're not sure if they can trust the direction that things are going. They can't trust the pattern because they've been hurt before. Okay, so can you, if the problem is the depth of damage, can you just keep doing the work? Can you keep working on building the connection? Can you keep working on growing yourself and pointing to a new way for the relationship? That's the way through determining whether there's the depth of damage is too great. Then if there's been no true change in the pattern, let me suggest you ask this question, can I do the work? Notice that's the response for both of those. Am I really willing to actually do the work? Not just read about it, not just collect information, not just ask people's opinions, but do the work. We are in an information-glutted society, and sometimes we fool ourselves into thinking that information is knowledge and that knowledge is wisdom. Information is simply information. When we begin to take it in and assimilate it into our patterns, it becomes knowledge. When we take that and apply it to our lives in a consistent way, it becomes wisdom. Until then, it's just information. And so you can collect books, you can collect courses, you can collect information and audios, including all of these, and still not let it get beyond the skin. It's got to get not just into your bones, but into your soul. And once it gets in there, then there can be a true change. If it hasn't transformed you, if your information hasn't transformed you, it's either the wrong information or you haven't truly taken it in. So the question is, can you truly take in that information? Take the information and turn it to knowledge. Take the knowledge and turn it to wisdom and put that into your relationship. Now, let's bring in one other reality. There are times when a marriage will not be restored. Let's just face the facts here and be clear about that. There are times when a marriage cannot be saved. Sometimes the spouse is too disconnected. Sometimes there are too many barriers to growth for somebody. And sometimes the outside relationship is so great and such a kind of a vortex that the person can't pull themselves out of it and the marriage is not going to survive. That is often the case. Unfortunately, there are many cases that I've seen where it is just intractable. We can't get beyond those pieces. And yet, I've watched many people decide to give up before they truly see what's possible. Sometimes they say, hey, you know what? I've been working on this for a whole month, or I've been working on this for 2 months, and I still haven't seen any results, and so I'm going to give up. What they've missed is sometimes it takes a while to get a foothold. Sometimes it takes a while for a spouse to see that there really is a place of forgiveness, that there really is a place of growth, that there really is a place of change. Sometimes it takes a while for somebody to grow into where they need to be. And so that can take longer than people estimate. So one of the reasons that Gary Chapman and I talked about the 6-month experiment is because that gives a longer term possibility. Because during the time where you're continuing to work on this, you've got to recognize you may not be getting back what you want. You may not be getting back the connection you want. You may not be getting treated the way you want to. You may not be finding the love that you want. But are you willing to say, for the sake of the relationship, for the sake of our long-term survival as a family, I'm going to set that aside and I'm going to keep at it. Yes, it is possible that your relationship will not make it, but the only way you'll know is to keep pushing until you can't push anymore. Sometimes there is that point in the sand where somebody says, I've done everything I'm willing to do. Sometimes it's I've done everything I can do. And sometimes it's when the other spouse makes some permanent decision that stops the possibility of moving forward. Those are the times when you say, okay, I've done all I can. A couple of those, you have to ask the question, have I done everything I can and want to do? And in the latter case, when a spouse says, you know, I'm taking this action and you're done, we're done, then it's outside of your hands. Then you can say, I did everything I can. One of the things I want at the end of this is for either you to have a restored relationship or for you to look in the mirror and say, I've grown as a person and I did everything I could to save this relationship. If you've done that, you've mastered one piece that the vast majority of the population never get to. And you'll understand who you are and what a relationship can and should be for the future reference. Okay, so one more time. The 3 reasons why your marriage may not be turning around is the depth of damage. It takes more time than has happened. There's no true change in your pattern, so you really have to dig in and make some changes, or that there's someone else, in which case you have to decide, can you wait that out? Those are the 3 big reasons that I see. Hopefully you can begin to see that as a course of action, how you get through that time frame and keep on working. If you do not have the Save the Marriage system, this will give you some pieces on how to get through this, how to really work through that depth of damage, how to really work through it so that there's healing, how to really change the pattern, how to really address the issues at hand. And you also can find help in my best-selling book, How to Save Your Marriage in 3 Simple Steps, which you can easily find on Amazon. And there you'll find the links to both the system and the book in the show notes, along with some links to some other useful resources if there's an affair or if you want to hear about our conversation, Gary Chapman's and my conversation about the 6-month experiment. Otherwise, I wish you the best as you continue to work to save your marriage.
You've been listening to Save the Marriage Podcast. For more information and help, please visit us at SaveTheMarriage.com.